You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thank you for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt. And on this episode, a really fun and inspiring conversation with Constantine Rizzulli and Cary St. Louis about, amongst other things, the hit off-Broadway production of Titanic. And for some context, this is how the show describes itself on the website. When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the 11-time Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a musical celebration that turns one of the greatest love stories of all time into a hysterical and joyful sleigh fest. And I can confirm that it is both hysterical and a sleigh fest. I have not had this much fun at a show in a very long time, and I was so excited to get to chat with Constantine because he's one of the creators and writers of the show. He's been in the business for a very long time. And Cary, because she recently joined the company of Titanic, so she has a fresh perspective. And she's also worked so much in New York and owns her own very successful vocal studio. So I knew this conversation would not only be fun, but that we'd probably get into some nitty-gritty, deep woo-woo stuff that would be inspiring. And it was all that and more. I really adore both of them. And you'll be able to tell very quickly how much I loved the show and how much they love doing it. They've just changed venues from an underground theater on the east side to the Darryl Roth Theater right by Union Square, which is what I'm referring to at the top of our conversation. So if you find yourself in New York anytime soon, do not miss Titanic. I rarely say that about a show. And in the meantime, enjoy this conversation with Constantine Rizzulli and Cary St. Louis. It's a different set, too, than the one that you guys had in Midtown, right?
Completely Definitely. Different.
Yes.
Like, it's a
Mercedes was
a whole
tiny,
fancy
tiny.
Thing. Right. Cary, did you see it in Midtown?
I did, yeah. I saw opening night. I actually ended up doing three shows at the Asylum.
Yeah,
but we
did.
Just didn't tell anybody. We just didn't, like, announce it. So I just did three shows and then came back and opened the Darryl Roth. So I got to experience a little bit of the magic in that space, which
right,
was very
because
fun.
I guess, well, you had been, you're like part of the fam, kind of, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's a stalker. She's a stalker. Creep. She's a stage door Johnny.
I'd seen all of the iterations of it and like everyone else, fell in love with the show. And, you know, Connie and I are such good friends that I was sort of like, it was like, when it becomes the right time, hopefully we'll get to do this together. So,
and well, what is what? Sorry, forgive me, but like, what is the origin story of the show, Constantine? What's the gag?
The gag is it's been 84 years.
Yeah.
It's been 7 years since the like conception of this crazy chaotic show. We were at a bar in LA doing dinner theater at Rockwell Table and Stage.
Yeah. What were you guys doing?
We were doing Scream. It was okay. A parody of Scream,
right?
That was trash, garbage, and
oh, and wait, and just you guys were doing a lot of these. Like this was like a thing that was going.
This was a thing in LA. Yeah, you take like movies and you either throw them on stage in this like immersive, weird dinner theater, either make it a parody or we did these other versions of the show, which was like Baz Luhrmann, but this was a different company. So it was like really cool. Like it was kind of. New age of like, what's LA gonna do for theater? Because there's no theater there. But to like, mix in the movie like world in LA to live theater, people then started coming and being like, this is really cool.
That's interesting. Right. I
didn't even
think
about that. Because
there's no theater
in LA.
Right.
Yeah. It's a movie town.
Right.
So we started doing these parody shows. And I'm looking around at all of these people that are ex Broadway veterans and on my friends. And I'm like, wow, we have to write our own shit because. This show right now or whatever we're doing, I was like, we can make this better or funnier or just like write our own stuff. And I was wasted at a bar with a martini. And I was like, after our Scream show, and I'm just like, hey, you know what the next idea is going to be? It's going to be Titanic, Celine Dion, Marla, you're going to play Celine. I'm going to be Jack. Alex, you're going to be Rose. And I think it's going to work. And everyone's like,
crazy.
No, they're like, no queen, never going to happen. And I was like, okay, I'm going to show you. So I went home that night and I did an outline and it miraculously, all of her songs from her catalog fit with like the storyline of Titanic, the movie. And I was like, am I a fucking genius?
Am I a genius?
I was like, And then I was like, can everybody come over and watch the movie just so I know that I'm a fucking genius? Ty came over, our director, and then Marla, and then Nicholas Connell, our musical director.
Yeah.
And we all watched the movie, and it was like, we were like, oh shit, this actually works.
It kind of works.
So then we took it into three little parts. Like Ty did the beginning, I did the middle, and then Marla did the end. And we would have writers' sessions every week. And they would come over, and we like would get a cast together, and we just read through stuff that we've written. And then we'd go back and go into our little homes and our little huts, and we'd just write, and then we'd do it again the next week. Yeah.
And was the same, because you guys didn't write Cruel, did you?
No.
Like, okay.
Was that
a Rockwell like transfer?
It was a Rockwell original transfer.
Okay, so you guys had been a part of those, and then obviously we're like, okay, it's time for us to like take ownership of something. Carrie, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that I think like Cruel Intentions was kind of the first like trial run of that style of a musical in New York.
In New York,
and
right.
Like, yeah, and our producer for Titanic, Eva Price, is the same producer from Cruel Intentions.
Right.
So I think it was like, that was sort of figuring out if it worked, and surprise, it worked. Like people loved it and found it to be so fun. And so I feel like this just takes it up a notch though, because this feels way more like a show. Cruel Intentions was more like a concert presentation type.
Yeah, I guess
bar.
I guess
like you
true.
Sat at tables and had
like
food
immersive
and
weird.
Drink. It was a little, it was just a different sort of style. This now, especially in the Del Rock, feels much more like a show. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is like a full production. Like,
well,
go for
and
it.
And it's not just the movie. Like, there's like, there is a, like, there's a concept. Like, there's, there, you know what I mean? Like, the Celine edition is such a weird, crazy, like,
kooky,
like,
crazy.
Right. Like, I literally was like, insane. How is this going to make sense? And like, it does, and it doesn't make sense. And it's, perfect.
And that's the whole point. And that's the whole point. Cause she's so kooky and weird in real life and such a just, flies by the seat of her pants, and I'm like, this is the perfect narrator of a show like this, because you can get away with murder and you're still going to just be like charmed and in love with the character of Celine Dion, because she is truly just like that.
And you really do get away with murder. Like, it is absolute murder. It is, like
it's,
I said, it is
unhinged chaos.
But
I think it's so funny because, like, at the beginning, right when we come out, like at the beginning, you know, it's, we're in front of, like, I feel like the way it starts, people are like, oh, like, you know, Marla gets introduced and people are like, wow, this is funny. And I always, like, in my head, I have this moment where I'm like, they have no idea. Where we're
going
to end up. Like, by the end, people's faces are just like gooped and gagged.
But it really does feel that way. Like, you really, like, you know, it goes further and further off the rails as the show goes on.
And yet it still makes perfect sense at the end.
Well, it's, yeah. And honestly, like, I think... There was another show that I was thinking about this. You just kind of buy into the non-reality. You're just like, it doesn't really matter. Like
it's like a fever dream.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It's like, it's fun. It's
and
people,
stupid. It's
and
just,
stupid. It's everything that you remember from the movie, plus Celine Dion, plus pop like culture. And we change it truly every single night. Like Marla's improv that she does, if you remember when we go downstairs to the steerage, is completely different every single night. Matt.
She's never done the same story different. Twice.
Never done the same story twice.
You're, come on. Not in the whole run.
Swear to Jesus the Lord. Every single
it's
night.
It's crazy.
It is different.
It is a masterclass.
She's a masterclass in improv.
That was my favorite moment of the entire show, was the story that she told, which like
which one was it? I don't even remember.
We don't even know because it's
was
different.
Was it Rob Lowe doing cocaine?
So that was in there. But the story she tells is that you took an edible when you went and saw Sister Act.
Oh, when I saw Sister Act. This is very true.
That you
very
saw Sister
true.
Act.
She gets
took
stories
an edible,
about
you
people.
Slept.
Like,
I slept through the whole show. I said Fabulous Baby and I was like, work, queen, yes, Patina. Then Dead Human for 2.5 hours. Miss Marla's complete 11 o'clock number. I
she
wake
said,
up.
She said, CCDC. Yeah, she's wailing.
CCDC, geez. Wailing, geez. I wake up to that fucking Virgin Mary disco ball that is the size of the theater. And I am so spooked that I'm like, what the fuck am I tripping on? that I up to a Virgin Mary disco ball with them, with like Minnie Mice meow mixing, screaming their tits off. And that's what I woke up from. It was a nightmare, but also a dream and a gem.
She also said that you thought she was annoying at the time. Did you know her? Did you know each other? Like, did you know her?
Yeah, we ran in the same circle back in the day. And I was always just like, she's so cold. I hate her. And everyone, she was like, he's so basic. And I hate him. Until we moved to LA and then we started doing these shows together. And I was like, I think I like you. Then
why did you move to LA? Like, what's the story?
I had to get out of here. I was burnt out. I had just finished Wicked. Went back to Wicked after, and then I was just like, I hit a wall and I was like, I can't just keep jumping from show to show to show.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to get out of here and go see the world and like get out of the city for a second. It was just all I knew from musical theater was like 10 years of musical theater from tour to Broadway. And I was just like, I need real life. I have no real life. I don't even know what people are. I need to get out of here. So I had a manager at the time. He was like, if you, you know, want to do this, he's like, you need to do this now. He's like, you're 24. You need to go. And I was like, okay. So I put my notice in at Wicked and I was like, I'm moving to LA and I'm never looking back. And I was there for 10 years until this.
Yeah. Which, and I think, and we'll come back around, but I'm curious to know, like, obviously you clearly wanted to do musical theater, and Carrie, this goes for you too. Like, you both had an interest in musical theater. You get on Broadway. That's quote unquote dream come true, right? Like that is the pinnacle. That is the thing. And then you're there and you're like feeling,
this is hard.
It's a job. Yeah. Like, it's 8 times a week. It's a lot of work. And you're feeling like, I don't even want to do this anymore. Was that?
Yeah. I did a similar thing to Connie.
I moved out to LA.
I did the exact same thing. I think after 10 years of like 8 shows a week straight, I just kind of was like, I gotta go. And it's learning your limits too, and being like, before I, you know, get too burnt out or start to dislike this thing, this, you know, dream that I've always had, and it's something that you love. But it is work at the end of the day, and like, it's a lifestyle too. That's I think as you get older. Like, 8 shows a week, only having a Monday night off is very difficult to have a life in general. And so I have a vocal studio. So I was like, let me just go out to LA for a couple months, just focus on that, do that. And then 3 months turned into 6 months because I wasn't ready to come back to New York. And then the world shut down. So it ended up being about like 2.5 years that I was in LA.
Which honestly, not the worst place to be. Like, with the weather.
We were neighbors. We lived 5 blocks from each other in LA. So we would go for walks every single day.
Yeah.
And so, did you guys ever see yourselves coming back? Like, did you think you were Connie knew he was coming back for Titanic.
Yeah,
I knew I was coming back for this because I...
But before Titanic, before the show, were you like, I could go back at some point?
Yeah, I always, like, New York is always, like, I'm from Jersey. So, like, the East Coast is totally home for me. But I just knew something in my gut. I just wasn't ready at the time to like come back to New York or to come back to this business. And I had a Matt Lenz, who's a you know, big director. He's like the associate on Hairspray. And he was my mentor, like growing up in this business. And he had told me, he was like, the second you start, like Carrie said, regretting and second guessing the thing that you love so much, it's time for you to take a step back and leave. And so you can see the big picture and,
and
not be that person. Not be that person who's stuck in a show for 10 years being miserable, who like just regrets every decision they ever made and hates the thing
because
that they love.
You don't do your best work like that. You're just, it bleeds into like your performing. And so I was like, it's gotta be the exact right thing to take me back into that schedule and that life.
Yeah.
And then Connie was like, Rose. And I was okay, it's the exact right thing. I'll do it.
Yeah. I told myself I always wanted to come back to New York, especially in this business, because I was so burnt out from it and, you know, the politics of it all. And I had it was amazing. I had such a great career at such a young age. And then, it started just like, then you get pigeonholed in a little box and you're like, okay, well, I don't want to just be seen as this. I there's more that I can do. And I really want to do more. And I just don't want to, you know, come back and forth to show to show to show to show. So I said, the only way I'll come back is on my own terms. And I didn't know what that meant at the time, but it was so crazy. I was just so adamant. I was like, I'm only coming back to New York or coming back to the musical theater business on my own terms. If I can make the rules, I will come back. But I'm not doing this bullshit of, you know, kissing this person's ass and, you know, swinging for this
it's
a standby for this.
It's exhausting. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want my left foot on, you know, stage right on four. And I don't want my taint to be on five. I don't want to, you know, put the spin on the seven. Like, okay, we're human. I don't want to be a fucking robot. And we've been robots for so long that I'm like, okay, who am I as a performer? Who am I as a creator? I need to put my own shit. That's why with this show, I feel like it is pure chaos, but it is everybody's individual sense of self that they bring to this theater and bring to the show that, you know, we color it within the box, but I want to make people happy and come to work and give your best performance. And what key do you want it in? And how do you, you know,
which you
perform every night?
You feel it in the audience. That's what I say. Like, you can tell that you guys are having a good time. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell that you guys
we
want to be there.
The best time.
Right. Because you're not robots.
There's no person.
Right.
There's no person over you being like, hey, Carrie, you didn't hit that C tonight. And then they put you in your head and then you're a fucking psycho. And you're like, wait, we're performers. We're supposed to have fun. Like this shouldn't be that difficult. And it makes, you know, the mental illness of it all, of musical theater.
Yes.
You know, growing up in the business has been, you know, it makes you crazy. And when you don't take a step back to realize it's just musical theater, people get, you know, they don't grow. No one grows as a human. So I was like, all right, I got to take a break.
It's also
burnt out.
It's also like with this cast specifically, it's so much like everyone is so good at what they do that it is so much of an ensemble piece. And like, the timing of it, like, yes, it's like, yes, it's so dumb. And the humor, like, you look at it and you're like, oh my God, it's just like a fever dream. But it's so specific as well. And like, everyone has
smart.
To be on the same page to make it work and fire. And like, I just feel it's like a trust thing. And we all trust each other to like play our part and do our thing and like be a part of the community or like the ensemble of it all. And like, I had this moment, I think I was telling Connie this last night, I had this moment the other night where when we all face out at the very end, the finale for Heart Will Go On, it's just like, it almost feels like back to the day of like a ragtag bunch, like a troupe of actors. Like we don't change costumes and we're all standing there and we all just face out. And it's like, we've done this whole, like nobody really leaves the stage for 2 hours straight. And we're just like telling this story. And we have this moment where we're all together singing together in this like, piece that we presented, and it's so special. Like there's something so magical about it in that it's just so simple. At the end of the day, it's just us getting together to tell you a story and you're along for the ride and we're having just as much fun as you are, you know.
It's,
I don't know,
it's very, I love the simplicity of the show. I mean, granted, it's a set of, you know, whatever, but one costume. We don't have a lot of props. The props that come out are, you know, gaggy props. But I think it's giving audiences more of a sense to, you know, imagine and have the sense of, wow, what am I going through? What do I remember from this movie? Because like if we had an actual boat on stage, it would take away from the magic of it all. And like we're giving people, the audiences, moments to think and be smart again and watch theater and like make up their own minds. And I think, you know, with a lot of shit that's out there, it's like so extravagant sometimes when you're like, I have this $55 million set that is giving me like a fucking seizure. But like, can we just go back to actually telling a story?
Girl, you're preaching to the choir. I saw a seizure inducing, quite literally a jukebox on the stage at the top of the show. On the day before I saw your show, and it was really it was so interesting to see like that and your show back to back, because and we even said like, I cannot tell you the last time I saw the movie Titanic. Like I don't even know, but you don't need, it doesn't, you remember the things that you need to remember, you know?
Yeah.
You don't, and like, it's the same. Some people haven't even seen it and they don't even really need it. Like,
and they don't even know it. No, they don't need it.
there's the Celine-isms. There's like something for everyone. I have found like all my friends and people that have come, like, it's like, doesn't matter if you're gay, if you're straight, if you're like a theater person, if you're a Celine fan, if you've seen the movie, like if you know what RuPaul's Drag Race is, like people get so much out of it regardless. And they'll be like, oh, I didn't even know that one reference, but like, you know, it's still entertaining and it still works in a way.
Yeah.
No, we bombard you.
No, it is. Oh, yeah. Like it is when a fever dream is a really good way of putting it. Like it's just like bang, bang, bang. And listen,
yeah, like one hit.
I didn't stop. I mean, we did not stop laughing for the it really is that.
And thank you.
It does feel like, I think you said, like that's kind of like it is young and scrappy and hungry. It's very like, you guys could do, it could be, you could have done that in a studio at Pearl and it would have had the same exact effect as it does on stage. You don't need the lights. You don't need like the big, and it doesn't have all that. Like it's not flair, but yeah, it's just so refreshing to see something like that because that's the kind of stuff that I really connect to. And I imagine like when you built it, was that the intention? That like it didn't need all that extra stuff.
We have said it to this day. We even were very hesitant about when they said we're building the set that looks like a ship, a boat. And I was like, because in the Asylum, it was very much black box, dark, sexy, immersive. We were running around the theater and it really works like that. And then we were shocked to see that it worked with the set too. Granted, the set's not crazy elaborate, nothing moves. It's just, it looks like anything goes. So you're cool.
I was waiting for the joke the whole night.
Well, because when they did that, we were like, okay, we need a joke for this because it literally is a white boat. It looks
exactly
like anything goes.
It's the non-equity anything goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and it works in its campy little rich self. But we always had said, I said, I don't want to replicate anything that looks like the boat, like really hardcore boat, like the Titanic, or elaborate set pieces that move on. It needs to be highs and lows, high lowbrow, and mix everything up. The comedy comes with like the paper mache set pieces or the paper mache props.
Yeah.
Or
it's
the
part
elaborate,
of it.
But make the costumes and lighting so fucking fierce that, and the vocals that people are like, because people lose their minds when they come because they're like, oh, this is going to be campy and fun. And
no,
then
the
we
vocals
start opening
are
our mouths.
Wild.
And everybody sings their faces
down
off. And Nicholas, who has done the arrangements, are so elaborate and so crazy that people are, it's like a Celine concert meets SNL and people don't know what to do with themselves. So I think that in our sense, that's our brand. It's very like, garbage meets beautiful.
It's like elevated.
It's like gorgeous garbage. It's like so
gorgeous garbage.
Like it, and it really, like, I'm so glad that you could say that and like understand. Because
are you kidding? Hands down, we say it all the time.
Yeah,
that's our brand.
Had you
my bro, low bro?
Did you guys like? Did you want to like? Had you written anything before? Did you want to be creating stuff? Had you like? Were you writing? No,
I was never considered myself a writer. If this was an idea that I just happened to feel very strongly and passionate about, that I went home.
A couple martinis will do that. Yeah.
A couple martinis.
He's
and
the
it was
new
like,
Lin-Manuel Miranda. It just came to him.
Of gorgeous garbage. I'm done.
He was like, I've got to tell this story. I've got to tell it. Who lives, who dies,
like,
who tells your story?
It was divine intervention, universe, Jesus, Buddha, Barney, whoever the fuck is upstairs, like channeled through my ass. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write this bitch. And then, you know, Ty and Marla came in and we all were like, this is crazy. This actually works. And we all fucking, you know, came together as a team and wrote this shit. And I never in a million years would have said, hi, I'm going to write a musical that's going to be a, you know, a fun hit in New York City. Never in a million years. But now I'm like,
Carrie, like, was this kind of thing ever on your radar at all? Like it was, you know, I mean, imagine going from Glinda to this is.
Well, but in a way, Cruel Intentions was a little bit glorious garbage as well.
Yes.
I don't know, this sort of niche. And I also, my Broadway debut is Rock of Ages. So the first show I ever did was Rock of Ages, which is
that's interesting.
I honestly feel like Rose is like such a similar track to Sherry in that I don't leave the stage for 2 hours. It's like wailing at the top of my lungs, but also like kind of comedic, but also still kind of the straight man in the situation.
Yeah.
With everyone else kind of being crazy around. So it feels very similar. I'm just 10 years older now.
Rock of Ages is sort of in this vein, but it's yes. a little bit more commercialized, I guess is maybe the word I'm looking for. Like it's not quite as campy. I mean, it is campy, but it's not quite
but it
as
is
campy.
Campy.
Yeah.
It's just a different, yeah. it's a different type of comedy. It's like we are playing, we're like break the fourth wall, but then we kind of like, we toe that line really well. And I think it's just a,
and you never take it too seriously. Never.
Yeah.
No.
Never,
but it's so stylized. It's really stylized. And it is like, yeah, I think maybe Rock of Ages, they're just stylized in different ways, but very similar in like the way the show works and moves and the audiences it draws in. And like, I don't know, people just attach to it because it's just, you get to come and just laugh your ass off and there's no, it's not stuffy. It's not like, I have to go through some emotional, it's just fun. It's just pure fun. And I feel like these days it's like, that's all anybody really wants. It's just like, let me just laugh at how stupid and ridiculous and like all these pop culture references.
It's the first thing I've seen this in a long time that I've been like, I can't wait to go back. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see it again because it's just fun.
Oh, good. Yeah.
You know?
And also you want to bring people. When I saw it, I was like, oh, God. Okay. I've got to bring this person, this person, this person. And I need to go with them because I want to see their reactions to these things that happen. It's so, the references are so modern. Maybe that's where it's different. Like Rock of Ages was like 80s references. So it was a little older of a generation or an audience. I think with this, like you get the Titanic fans, you get that generation, but you also get like, there's so many pop culture references that are happening.
Oh my God, so
many. And he's updating them. Like it's updated constantly.
Are you White Lotus? The White Lotus line is great.
White Lotus. Yeah. Well, Russell came, who's a genius.
He is amazing.
He came the next day after the season finale of White Lotus and he was like, "Hey, do you mind if I throw this in?" And I was like, "Yeah." "What?" And he was like, "These gays are trying to murder me." And I was like, "Absolutely."
It got a standing ovation.
Yeah, of
standing
course.
Ovation.
It was like insane. Listen,
he said it and I was like, "Oh, yes." I was like, "Perfect."
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I feel like I always with Marla and Ty and Nicholas, we always like to brand ourselves the anti-musical, which is like we don't follow the rules of what needs to be done. We're just like, "Yeah, we're going to change it."
But I think like, that's so powerful though. I think that's so powerful because so many people feel like, and I guess I'll speak to my own experience.
Because when you go to a school,
it's so strict. It's this like elite club that you have to, you know, you have to somehow finagle your way into, or someone has to welcome you in. And if you break the rules, then it's like, you're out, you know, and that's scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you can't be an individual. That's the sad part. It's like, you can't, like, what happened to the days where it's like, would you tell Patti LuPone to not be Patti LuPone?
Would you tell Bernadette Peters?
Not to be Bernadette fucking Peters? And you're like, wait, so I have to sit here and literally be robot and do exactly what the person did before me. And there's no sense of, you know, my own self into this character so that people can come back and see what I do. Then why go back to see a show? It's going to be the same shit. I don't want to see, you know, the same shit over and over again. I want to be like, I want a new experience when I go see a theater. I want to see this person do it.
Yeah, and the best stuff that I've seen is like the ones where I'm like, oh, this individual is bringing themselves to this thing. And I want to be clear, the thing we're talking about right now is like commercial theater, because that's primarily what it is, right?
Of course.
New York is that. That's what New York is. It's commercial theater. Yeah. Right. It's like regional theater in New York. They just want to make money. Yeah. That is the goal, right? It's just so refreshing.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. Suf's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So wait, are we like, what's, are we doing another one? Like what, like, are we working on another? Like, I mean, I know you're in the middle of the run, so it's like, I'm sure you're like exhausted, but.
He's like, time, yeah, there's, so much I'm of like, it.
There's so much time. Meanwhile, I'm like, I gotta go. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, we've been, there's some things that are in the realm of, yeah, of hopefully being cooked up, but like, we'll really get to that when, you know, we take a break.
Yeah.
And I don't know when that's going to be.
Because do you guys want to tour it too? Because I feel like it would do so well on the road.
Yes. I think hopefully the tour will come about soonish.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's talks about everything. There's talks about,
of course,
you know, London, Australia, you know, whatever, like, yeah, like everything else, you
oh
know,
my God.
I would,
wow,
hope in my life to, you know, as much as it's doing so well off Broadway, I would love to see a version of this on Broadway one day.
Hey, listen, they didn't think Disaster would come to Broadway. And my mom,
exactly,
when I was telling her about it, she's like, is it like Disaster? And I was like, exactly. I was like, it is stupid fun. And yeah, it's
and
one of those
room
things.
For that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
There's room for that. We don't have to always have, you know, I call them wokesicles. We don't have to have a wokesicle where it's going to teach you exactly what to do. And I'm like, oh, cool. But there's room for everything. And there's, and I not that I hate, but like, it makes me, you know, a little bit annoyed when people are like, oh, you're just a parody musical. And it's like, yeah, sure. But it's also, comedy is way harder than a dramatic piece.
Oh yeah. No!
So
it's
more
it's
of a formula,
comedy.
And it's more,
yes,
if it's smart and if it's like something that is nonstop and it's really funny, that to me is also high art. So
yeah,
I don't like when people put us in the box like, oh, you're just a stupid little parody show. I'm like, well, come
no,
to see
it's
it.
It's not that, yeah.
But I think that's why when people come by the end, they're just like,
they're,
I mean,
they're
so many
away.
Of my Broadway friends are like, it's so dumb, but it's so funny and it's so smart. And then you guys sing, like the singing alone is just so like out of this world from yeah. every member of the cast that you just leave being like, wait, this is not just some off-Broadway parody musical. Yeah. Like it's very, I don't know. The cast is incredible as well.
The cast is incredible. I mean, there's a need for this type of genre and this type of musical. It's like I always go back to SNL because like I love feeling like that because it's
we
very
compare
much
it to that too.
We're
yeah,
a troupe.
It is that.
We compare it to that, and it's like SNL wins the fucking Emmy every year, every single year. So you're gonna tell me that's not high art or that's right. not that doesn't deserve an Emmy because it's stupid and they're just, you know, making up dumb characters. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's like I would, you know, I just want to turn the narrative around of like there could be things that, yes, they are stupid in the stereotype of, oh my God, this is so dumb. But we can still give it a praise. It's like a Urinetown or a Xanadu. It's like, we need these musicals.
Well, and if it's good, it's really good. And when it's bad, yeah, Book of Mormon, really it's like bad. The same.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it could, you know what I mean? But that's what I'm saying. Like, it could go either way. Right. It could be, if this was bad, it would be like really, really bad. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's like, it really, really, really hits the mark.
I mean, we get audience members that are like, the other day, this girl comes up to us and she goes, I would see this every single day if I could.
Yeah,
like,
she would
come back every day. And we were like, okay, like, you know.
I was like, come back.
It's just,
mean, like we said, it's always going to be different. Obviously, there's improv and stuff. And, you know, watching you guys try to break each other is such a fucking blast for us. It's like,
yeah, I'm hopeless.
You are hopeless, Carrie.
Oh my God.
Carrie is so easy, and it makes me so happy. To make her fucking lose.
But it's that SNL thing too, right? Like, that's what my fiance was saying. Was like, he's like, you want them to break. You want to see them, because we know that you guys are having a good time, and it just sort of opens the whole thing up.
Russell, if I don't laugh at what Russell says to me, he will just stare at me until I laugh. Like, that is what has become the, like, he will just stare at me, and I'm like, oh no, I can't. Oh
yeah!
The jacket. You saw the jacket snafu.
The jacket was so good. Oh, it was so good. Oh man, that was a perfect little mishap. We were like, yes.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
I love when stuff happens to Carrie, because she does not know what to do, and I had left her hanging probably twice on stage by accident.
I'm not an improv actress.
When did I leave you hanging, Carrie? What happened?
You didn't come out. Oh,
I almost missed my entrance because I had no idea where we were backstage. And there's that scene for To Love You More when she's on top and I'm supposed to be coming out before her. And I'm in my dressing room being like, where are we in the show? Because we had just moved to the Daryl Roth Theater and I had no idea how the fuck to get upstairs or to go find my way on stage. And I hear the music and then I just hear Carrie being like, what a beautiful night. What a beautiful night. And I'm nowhere to be found. And
I'm saying that line over and over and over again.
I eventually went, Jack. And then I just ran off stage because I was like, I can't. I literally short circuited. Like,
and then
I come
running from the audience and I'm like, I'm here, Rose. I'm here. Just a mess. Disaster.
Awful. But
no, things happen every day that
make us laugh.
Oh my God. And that's part of the, you know, and again, because the stakes are. It's just nice because the stakes are low, right? Obviously, you care.
So low yet so high.
Right. You care, right? You want it to be funny and you want it to be good and you want people to have a good time, but there's nothing precious. Nothing is too precious. At least that's the way it seems from the audience.
Yes. I was just going to say, although I will say that it is very fun and we're having a great time up there, but like, these tricks are hard. Like, it's hard. It's also difficult. And I think, like, people see it and they're like, oh my God, it looks so fun. And I'm like, yeah, we're having so much fun. But doing this 8 times a week is also hard. Like, our bodies are just, like, running and scrawling. And, like, it's like, I don't know, a play that goes wrong mixed with Celine Dion, which is, like, the hardest vocals ever. And there's no intermission. There's no break. It's just, like, being shot out of a cannon.
We're the whole ensemble. We're singing every single number backstage too. Like, I'm running to do a change, singing backup vocals.
I thought there were tracks for sure. That is wild.
No, it's all of us. Yeah,
but that, you know what? That's that whole thing. That's the whole, like, it's that young scrappy hungry thing. Like, you guys, like, you're like, we can do it. You're like, we can do it. We'll just do it.
Yeah, yes. I tell myself every day, I'm like, how the fuck and why the fuck did I write this so hard for myself? When I was like, I should just come in and be like, okay, easy, gonna do one number and call it a day. Yet I have given myself the hardest track. I'm schwabamming my 200-pound ass on the fucking wooden stage every single night. Are you crazy? Am I insane? Like, what have I done to myself to deserve this?
Yes.
I was in PT yesterday, and I literally on the table with my PT guy, and I'm like, fix me. He's like, what is wrong with you? I was like, I don't know. What do I have to prove to myself? I've been doing this shit for 10 years. I gotta go.
Yeah, so, okay, so let's talk about that for a second, because I think this is an interesting, I'm wondering, like, what your perspective is, both of you guys, on landing here now, at this point in your careers, and, like, what it's teaching you, or what you're, what you've learned about yourself, you know, at this point, because this is interesting, like we were saying, you know, to have had a successful career, and have worked and worked and worked, and then now to be doing something like this, I imagine there's some sort of like, there has to be some sort of change that has happened or is happening within you as an artist,
has
like as a creative person.
Engine me.
Yeah, exactly.
Carrie, take it away.
I'll start because we have very, I mean, obviously this is like Constantine's child. I am just a part of this production, which is wonderful. But for me, I think it's like, it's not life or death anymore for me. Whereas I know when you're young and you're trying to make it, it's like, oh, what, you're always thinking, what's the next thing? And oh, am I ever going to work again? And it just kind of creates this rat race in your brain. And of course that's part of it. Like, you know, it's the industry that we're in, but I think this time around, like, I'm genuinely doing this show because I love it so much. And I love Constantine so much. And it's just so fun for me to be able to like go and clown around with my favorite people in the world. Like every night, we're just like, we're obsessed with each other in life. So like we're backstage, like, hi, 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 hi. And then we go on stage and we go, hi, 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 hi. And it's just, we're getting paid to do that. Right. And like, it is such a, it's so fun. The audiences are electric. Like I could come into the theater in a kind of a bad mood and I always leave in a better mood than I came in with. So for me, it's just, it's nice to be a part of something that I believe in with people I love and to have a good time. Like, I think my perspective shift is just like, enjoy this, because, you know, I look back at some of those 10 years where I was doing 8 shows a week straight and I'm like, I wish I would have enjoyed it a little bit more. Like playing Wicked and playing Glinda and Wicked was like my ultimate dream. And I definitely appreciated it so much while I was in it. But there were also moments where it was just hard.
Yeah.
And I think I look back and I'm like, I wish I could have enjoyed that a little bit more, that instead of feeling like I was in a pressure cooker and it's just like, you got to do the right thing at all the right times. So it's really given me a lot of freedom as a performer, as an artist. And like, I'm a vocal coach. So like, I'm taking all this knowledge and like imparting it on my students, being like, this isn't life or death. Like your happiness is genuinely the most important thing outside of anything else. Like you will end up on your feet, you will end up where you're supposed to be, but like don't ever let it become something that like makes you hate yourself or hate your or not believe in yourself, you know. It's not worth it for that. Mm-hmm. So that's my perspective shift. But yeah
Connie. Oh my god, good. Honestly, mic drop, Carrie St. Louis.
Yeah, so gorgeous. So gorgeous. We love
that.
It.
I was like, tell me more. No, I mean, honestly, what Carrie has said too, it's, I think the shift has been from fear and doubt to just being wide awake and like loving something that you used to love purely because of joy and happiness and being connected to your like root self. And I've become such a Zen fucking hen these past 5 years because I needed to like really do some spiritual awakening for myself and just get my mind right and get it in this, you know, alignment from this crazy career that I started at 17. I, you know, graduated high school and joined the Hairspray tour as Link Larkin. And it was just like off to the races. So all I knew was going from high school on tour and just growing up and being an adult. And how, as amazing as it was, and you know, I'm so fortunate and I was lucky and grateful. It's, you forget because there's pressure and then you have to try and be the best version of yourself. And at that young of an age, you're just forced to grow up so fast and you're like, okay, well, I have to do this. I need to be amazing. People are coming to see the show and they're going to judge me and my voice. I have to sing this perfectly every night. And the perfectionism will fucking kill you.
Eat you alive.
It will eat you alive. And trying and nonstop, and then you forget and you just are the more you effort something, the more you effort something, you're putting a hand in between what you really love and what you truly should be. So I needed to take a full step back, you know, moving to LA and really just getting my brain wrapped around the sense of, okay, I need to go within and see how I can truly wake up and be happy, because it's a choice to be happy. So I started meditating and I started telling myself, this is just a job. It's a career. It's something you love. So why do I hate something that I love right now? I need to figure this out, because I'm getting all these other voices and shit in the way of the one thing that I truly love is performing and giving people the gift that we were blessed with to laugh, to be moved. You know, we are their outlet for entertainment. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So the second I started being like, okay, I'm going to give back my talent instead of it being so self-indulgent and being like, I need to be perfect and I'm number one and you start becoming a crazy person, and then you start comparing yourself to people. And that is the one thing that will ruin you. And then you get lost. You're so lost. And I was so lost until I finally made my way back. And I think the pandemic really helped to really quiet my mind even more, because this was something that I was waiting for so long. And I was like, oh God, this show that we wrote, I don't know if it's ever going to happen. And then you put that into perspective and you're like, okay, well, it's not going to be the end all be all. I'm here living this life. So what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not about
how's my life. Yeah.
How's my life? How's my relationship with myself?
Yeah. Your value is more than just
family,
your work,
musical theater or acting or whatever. And the second you start putting all of that first, and then you watch how your career and things will come at the right moment, and you're like, wow, I didn't get that job because it was opening a door for this, or this didn't happen because, and like, I look at everything like now as a blessing of, if I don't get this fucking job, who the fuck cares? I'm going to go have brunch with my friends and I'm going to enjoy this day. And I'm going to see the people that I love, and I'm going to do other hobbies that make me happy. Get your vibration high. Get your everything aligned into the sense of like, I'm whole without a career, and you will be completely fine. And then the universe will drop all these
things
little buckets.
Come, right. Of course.
Yeah.
And I mean, they will come and they will come at the right
time.
But I
think that comes with like age too, is you just start being
Definitely.
Like, oh, I'm worth way more than like what my job, like, honestly, when you're in a show, you can't even hang out with your friends like you used to. So like, I used to be like, oh God, everyone's going to be wondering what I'm up to. And now I'm like, I'm sorry, I like literally can't hang out with you because I'm doing a show. And it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, we're friends beyond whatever any show anyone's doing, you know? Like, there's room for everyone.
Yeah, there's room for everyone. Humans. The second that you can not be that cutthroat, because we grew up, I mean, I'm sure you grew up the same, in this business of like cutthroat. You don't give anything away in an audition. You just hold your ground. You don't help anybody. And I'm like,
well, someone else getting it means you didn't. It means like someone died instead of you. It's like,
which is crazy. Being on the opposite side now as a creator and going into these auditions and seeing people come in now that I'm on the other side of the table, I'm like, it has nothing to do with our talent. It's so eye-opening. I wish everybody could see this. It has nothing to do with your talent. It's just either you have this essence of this character that we are looking for, or you don't. And it has nothing to do with you personally, but we used to take it so fucking personally just gutted. I can't believe they didn't pick me. It's like, you're just not right. You are just not right. And that's fine. And that's cool. Great. Also, do I want to do a show that I'm not right for, that I can't sing eight shows a week?
That's the tea. Like,
no,
do you want to do a show where you have to pretend to be someone that you're not? Like, that is nightmare.
And I think the second, like, you, great point, Matt. Pretending to be somebody that you are not. And that, in this business, I had tried so hard to be this crazy straight leading man who was, because I look like a leading man and I'm going to be, you know, the Aaron Tveits of it all and the Jeremy Jordans and I'm perfect and blah, blah, blah. But I'm this like weird, gay, funny guy that everyone's like, don't do that. So I was like, okay, now I'm going to write a show that I'm going to showcase all of my fucking quirks, because there's room for that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be pigeonholed in a box to be like, hey, I'm Danny Zuko. How you doing? Hey, Riz.
Oh, my God.
Macaroni.
Oh, like, God.
I don't want to do that anymore.
Macaroni.
Yeah, there's a fucking diamond in my macaroni, Riz. Like, I'm not doing that. I mean, I probably would kill it, honestly, if there was another production of Grease.
Yeah, right.
But it's staying, it's like, as so cliche as it is, staying true to yourself and actually finding out yourself and being
okay
with it.
That's what I was
going to
say.
You know what? This is me. I'm not a fucking screaming high tenor, and I will never be. I'm a fucking baritone. Great. And I'm trying to, like,
bro, you don't want pussy to be a
tenor. Top these notes.
Forget it. Yes, forget
it. We all wanted to be tenors back in the day. And it's like, who cares? Who gives a shit? I don't. Okay, cool. They can belt a high C. Doesn't mean that you're the most amazing performer ever. Get out of here.
No,
and I do this with Carrie all the time.
The thing I'm hearing is that it sounds like, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, it sounds like you both have sort of gotten off the ladder of this feeling that we have to keep climbing, that, is this going to lead to in my career? What is this going to, how big can I get? How many people are going to know me? How many followers am I going to have? How much money can I make, et cetera? It's just this perpetual climb thing that doesn't, it really doesn't end. There is no,
you can
win a fucking Tony and it's still, you're still wanting more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
Yeah. So to hear you guys, it sounds like you guys have both sort of like just stepped off that ladder and are in, you're like, I'm just going to do my thing and be myself.
And it translates like the audience is freeing for everybody involved. It's like, we can all laugh at this.
Yeah, people are losing their minds. I mean, they come up to Carrie and I and they're like, you guys, this is wild. I brought my 84-year-old grandmother and then my 10-year-old child and they both loved it and they're both crying and they're both laughing. So to me, I'm like, great. There's way more than, you know, being that stereotypical, I have to be a star and I'm making millions and I'm going
to
win Tonys.
Like,
great.
It won't end.
Where does that go? Like,
you're not going to be happy if you're chasing the rat race. If you're in a hamster wheel, you're not going to be happy.
And I think you said it well that, like, obviously, you know, the sort of baseline of it is like happiness is a choice, right? But I think what that looks like is it's like, what is your life? Like, how can you fill your life with joy, right? How can you do things during your day or just in general that are going to make you happy or feel fulfilled? And then the musical theater thing is like just a whipped cream on top of that. You know, it's not the bread and butter. It's not the actual cake itself. And I think that's what a lot of people get caught up in is because, especially if you go to school for musical theater or you're thrust into it at a young age, it feels like your whole world feels like if I don't do this thing, if I don't win.
And if I'm not good, I'm going to disappoint somebody. And then I'm going to fail. And it's all this fear and this pressure of I'm going to fail and people are going to see the real me and how did I bamboozle this? And it's just like all these stupid, crazy things go on in your mind. And I'm like, oh, God. Girl, it ain't that deep. It's
that
musical
deep.
Fucking theater. We're singing and dancing for a living. It's like we're not curing cancer. I'm not doing brain surgery. It's musical theater.
The other thing I was thinking about was like, I think, you know, and having you both here is interesting in that like the relationships I think are maybe the most important part of quote unquote the business or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Yes. Agreed.
Not only are those the things that are going to, well, I think first and foremost, those are the things that are going to sustain you in the sense of like, that's what's going to make you feel whole and fulfilled. They just did a 85-year research study on adult development. And the one thing, the main thing that they said determines if people are happy or not is the strength of the relationships in their life. And if you have strong friendships and people that you can call and support, a support system, a loving support system, it makes all the difference. It's everything.
I
always say I want to work with my friends,
and then you you don't know what opportunities are going to come and how people are going to bring you into certain things and what that's going to turn into. And you guys are
we would have never known with Cruel Intentions that this would lead to, you know, like 5 years later we'd be doing this. But I always tell my students, I'm like, it's above and beyond like your talent. You just want to be someone that people want to work with. It's like any job, right? Like your goal, it's an interview. If you're going to be on the road with a company for a year and you are known as a problematic person, or you're, you know, it's like you're not going to get cast just because no one wants to work with you. Like, and these little tiny, it's like Connie and I became really super close. Actually, kind of, we met in Wicked, and then Cruel Intentions happened. We were like, oh, we can't wait to like actually like work together. And then we became best friends, and now we're doing this. And it's like, you know, Eva was the producer of Cruel Intentions. So when my name came up for this, she was like, yes, done. Love Carrie. Like, it just, it's these little tiny pieces of the puzzle that like you just at the end of the end of the day want to be someone that everyone wants to work with. Yeah. Period, point blank.
Yeah.
Above and beyond your talent.
Just be a good person. Like,
be a good person.
It's as simple as that. Like, be empathetic, be sympathetic, like be everything that you would want to be treated, how you would want to be treated. And it's like, I also going back to Matt Lenz, who I love, he's always like, make sure when you're on tour, you are respectful to the people who open the door for you at the theater, the people who are washing your clothes, the people who are in the elevator with you, anybody, you always be fucking respectful. And you treat them how you would want to be treated. And it has resonated with me. He's like, these random dressers in Paducah, Kentucky, who are working their ass off for you that you will probably never see again. Or 5 years down the road when you're on another tour, they go, oh my God, I remember you were so sweet. Hi. And you make an impression. It's like, okay, cool. Be a good person. And you want to work with your friends. Like, ultimately, this whole cast, when we first started, we're all of my friends. And right. I said, you're just going to do this. You're going to play this part. That's my dream, to work with your friends, because you know what's up. And that's what's a loving environment.
Yeah.
No bad eggs.
No bad eggs. No, we don't have
oh, bad eggs.
We don't have time.
One rotten egg spoils the bunch.
Yeah. Like, life is just too short, you know? And again, like, it's supposed to be fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't need to have that energy in our professional lives or in our personal lives. Like, no. I'm just like, I don't need it. I don't need the drama. I don't need the gossip. I just don't, I don't care. Like, I'm too old now to have to deal with that anymore.
And this career is too hard. It's like, okay, we're not going to do that
up
today. The jig is up. We're not doing that today. And if you want to come back around, go outside and come walk back in this door.
But that's hard. I think people have a hard time like getting, like releasing friendships that are not serving them, you know, like they feel like obligated to people or things. And they're like, well, this person, you never know what the opportunity. And I think that's the other side of this, is that like, it's not worth it in the end. If the people that you're around or that you're spending time with are sucking you dry, you don't leave feeling more full or happier or enjoying yourself when you're somewhere, you know, you're just on edge trying to impress people.
Oof. The best thing is to stop being a people pleaser. And I was the biggest people pleaser growing up. Nonstop. My energy was like leaps and bounds, miles and miles, hundreds of thousands of miles away from my soul. And my energy was, what is this? Oh my God, this person. I'm going to do this because I need to make sure this person likes me, and this person, whatever. Oh, I'm going to be so extra because this person needs to think I'm funny. It is fucking exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not, and people and just it's suck. Not, it's not
they
worth
take
it.
And
it's not
take
worth it.
And take and take. And then you're like, I'm good. The people that I need will get it and be close to me. And we don't have to do this, you know, energy exchange where all you do is take, take, take.
The other thing that I felt seeing the show was inspired. I was like, man,
good.
Because I think, and I've talked to a lot of people about this who've seen it, that, you know, you as someone who's in the industry and who's a creative person, like, I was just hyper aware of the fact that, like, you guys put this together. Like, you guys are the ones that made this happen. And sitting there, you're like, yeah, why don't we fucking just make our own fucking shit? Like
right.
Something we felt like in college. I remember feeling that way too. So I'm curious, like, what's the guidance? What are some of the lessons that you can share? You know what I mean?
Honestly, it's listening to your gut. Mm. You know, that little, or you're that little tiny person, or you just feel it, like this, that intuition of like, wow, I'm onto something, or not being afraid to have an idea and just be like, okay, is this going to go off all right? Are people going to laugh at me? Are they going to like it? Who the fuck cares? Listen to your gut. And if you have an idea, write it down or do it. Just do it. Make it happen and see what happens, because you will learn so many lessons from just trying to build something and create something from the ground up, which is your own, and or being like, oh, I don't really like to do that if it goes the other way. Like, it'll right. teach you a lesson. And I just think you have to be true. That is staying true to yourself. I was not a writer. Now I'm like, okay, I guess I'm a writer. Was not a writer. You just go, if it rings a bell inside of your soul and you're like, oh my God, I have to do this. Don't yeah. stop. Just do it. It's going to be hard. It's going to be weird. You're not going to know what the fuck to do, but ask questions. Be like, hey, I've never done this before. Is there a formula? There is no formula. I always say there's no formula to anything. You can't break the code. You are the code. So if you can listen to yourself and just do it, by all means, just don't be afraid to do it.
Yeah. I also think too, what's gonna like, this is completely like sort of separate enough, but like when I was building my vocal coaching business, I remember feeling at the beginning, what was really stopping me from doing it was I felt like it was eggy. I felt like it was like, oh, like, come
Girl,
to my
say
studio.
This
like,
shit. Felt, say this shit.
It felt so eggy. And I remember this, like, it was kind of like one of those like light bulb moments where I saw someone else doing it in this industry. And I was like, oh, it's so eggy what she's doing. And then I sat with that for a second and was like, I think the reason I think it's eggy is because I'm jealous. And that's just what I want to be doing. And I'm just not doing it because she was so successful at it. Like, I was like just watching her business and her brand grow. And I was sitting back going, and I'm like, why do I care? Why do I care so much? And at the end of the day, what I realized is no one is thinking about you as much as you're thinking about you. No one cares about what you're doing, literally ever. And so I was like, okay, fine. I'm just going to make an Instagram that's separate for my studio and just like so that it's not bombarding people that don't care about it. And if they want to follow that, they can. My business tripled overnight. And all these people that I thought were going to think it was eggy ended up coming to me asking advice like, oh, how did you start? Like, how did you grow it? How did you do it? And now all those people are doing it too. And I'm like, it doesn't like. At the end of the day, and now it's like a full running business that like I have that I'm so proud of and I work so hard on. And like, I look back and I'm like, if I would have continued to sit in like, oh, this is going to seem eggy and this is going to be dumb, I wouldn't be where I am now, where it's like, I run my own business, like, and I can do that and have the lifestyle and the life that I want. So like, just get out of your own way. Like, nobody cares about you. Nobody's thinking about you.
Huge. I think
nobody's
like,
thinking about you.
No one's thinking.
They don't care. And if they are jealous or think that it's eggy, it's probably because they want what you have at the end of the day. Like, or they just don't have the courage to like do what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's always, it's like imposter syndrome too, because that's what you face.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, I'm going to put out a product that I'm considered a writer.
Writer.
And I wrote this musical. It's like, everyone's like, okay, Queen, you literally, you're an actor. You now, oh, you're going to be a writer now. Okay, we get it.
Right, but whose voice is that? Like, who, like, you know what I'm saying?
That's my own.
Like, right, exactly.
It's my own shit. It's my own shit in that I'm in my way because of fear. Of fear and doubt.
Cut to the New York Times.
Cut to the New York fucking like, Times.
Literally.
Do you know what I mean? But that's what you, that, if when you get out of your own way and you start just listening to yourself and something that genuinely makes you happy. We were writing this because it made us happy to make each other laugh on the side. Getting away from the crazy business of film and TV and musical theater and career, and to just have an outlet to look at my friends at a table every Monday night in my apartment in LA and make each other laugh. What more can you want?
Yeah,
but
right.
Also, even if it didn't end up being this, that's still
that's what I was going to say. There was
great
it sounds
making,
like there's no attachment to the outcome. I'm here, and that's something I hear you both say.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no attachment to what this is going to turn into, or what this is going to get us, or what this is going to make us, or what it's not.
But you
it's
never
not
know
about
that with
that.
Life.
Right.
Yeah, it's and just one step at a time. My mom always said that too. Like, I get very overwhelmed by being like, well, what about like in a year and blah, 2 years, 3 years? Like, and especially with writing a show. I mean, I like literally if you just started being like, and it's going to be at the Dale Roth and it's going to be like, you would have like been paralyzed by like, how will I ever get there? My mom is always like, she's like, it's one step at a time. You do one little thing at a time. You don't get too ahead of yourself. You just, okay, now you made the Instagram for your business. Okay, great. Now you have a way for people to reach out for lessons on your website. Okay, like it's just little by little. And then one day you turn around and you go, people are like, wow, how did you do this? And you're like, one step at a time. I just literally just stayed the course. And even if it doesn't end up that way, you're putting forward motion towards something. It can always offshoot in a different direction. Like you never know. Or you could be like, wow, in building my website, I found out that I'm like actually really into website design. So now I'm going to do that instead. Like there's so many avenues.
You never know where it's going to go. Cause you think you have this ultimate through point. Cause we're like musical theater, Broadway, I'm going to win a Tony. So like, it like is such a stereotype of like what you think is going to happen. But the second you let that go, it's amazing.
Everything else
like the world's your fucking oyster and you can do whatever you want. And I think that's the greatness of taking a step back and then coming back to something that is on your own terms now. And you're like, wow, you know, day by day, it's not day by day.
Oh, we went there. I thought we were going to Godspell. I thought we were I was surprised that we took it there, but that's okay.
I don't really know. I was kind of like, all right, you know.
Damn, this was some.
We got deep, Maddie.
Yeah, that's the way I like it too. Like,
Reach, we went to church on a Tuesday.
Getting high on the spiritual vibes and the guidance. And listen, I can tell too, like just by the way that you guys kind of both light up about talking about this stuff, like how much you care, you know, and how much that you're not in that place of being a 25-year-old or a 22-year-old that's coming out of school that is like everything and needs to be the biggest deal. Like it's really amazing. I mean, obviously the show is brilliant and wonderful and I've said all that stuff, but to see you guys like light up talking about this stuff it's just such a testament to like where you guys are at. So it's great. I'm thankful that we got to do this. This was like really fun.
Me too. I'm so happy we did this.
Matt,
you're the best. So good to see you.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.